be talking about wild edibles and a practical guide to foraging with Sergey Botenko. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking with Dr. Beatty about cleanses and how you can just increase your energy this time of year. But before we do that, here's Rich with the health news.
A large study from Japan suggests adopting a vegetarian diet may help people shave points off their blood pressure. The research, a review of 39 studies that included almost 22,000 people, found vegetarians had blood pressure that was significantly lower than those who ate meat. While the results were modest, the study's authors say clinical guidelines suggest they could reduce a person's risk of heart attack by 9% and the risk of stroke by 14% if sustained over time. But at least one cardiologist says the study findings are preliminary and he's not ready to tell his patients to abandon meat. The study authors say it didn't seem to matter what kind of vegetarian diet a person followed. The study findings were published online February 24th in the journal JAMA Internal Medicine. Hitting a soccer ball, a common move on the playing field, can have serious long-term effects on the brain, warns a Canadian researcher. According to a study by Dr. Tom Schweitzer, director of the Neuroscience Research Program at St. Michael's Hospital in Toronto, concussions account for as many as 8.6% of injuries in soccer. Some of these concussions are caused by collisions, while others come from heading, deliberately using your head to control the ball. Schweitzer says not enough attention is paid to the consequences of this particular tactic, which can have lasting effects on thinking and memory, even when the blows to the head aren't severe enough to cause a concussion. In a review of existing studies published online recently in the journal Brain Injury, Schweitzer examined how often concussions occur in soccer. One study revealed nearly 63% of varsity soccer players had symptoms of a concussion at some point, but only about 19% knew it. In another study, nearly 82% of players who had at least one concussion had two or more of these head injuries. The research found those who suffered one concussion had a 3 times greater chance of having another than players who never had this type of injury. And finally, a recent study has found women with higher intakes of omega-3 fatty acids have fewer depressive symptoms. It has been suggested depression has reached epidemic proportions in recent years, and what we eat may play a role in this increase. During the last century, consumption of soybean oil has increased 1,000-fold, and consumption of omega-3 oils has decreased. Research suggests this imbalance between omega-6 and omega-3 oils may result in chronic conditions, including memory decline and depression. Recent research included more than 1,700 participants from the Baltimore area. All participants completed a 20-item questionnaire rating their depression symptoms and also completed 2 24-hour dietary recalls, recording what they had consumed for 2 days. Women in the upper third of omega-3 consumption had a 49% reduced risk of elevated depression symptoms. Similarly, the greater of the omega-3 to omega-6 ratio, the lower the risk of elevated depression symptoms.
Well, our first guest, Sergey Botenko, has written it's a practical guide to foraging and easy identification of 60 edible plants and 67 recipes. The book is called Wild Edibles. Sergey, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about this book and how you got into learning about wild edibles.
Well, the book was many years in the making. Basically, I had a very unconventional upbringing. When I was 13 years old, my family decided to hike from Mexico to Canada on the Pacific Crest Trail.
Betcha that was fun.
And, you know, at first, I thought my parents were nuts. But, slowly but surely, I got into it. And till this day, I think it's one of the biggest accomplishments that I've made. But basically, we hadn't hiked much. We didn't know how much 5 hungry hikers could eat. And so what started happening is 2 weeks into our trip, we would go through all the food we'd prepare for that week, and then we'd have to hike for several days on an empty stomach.
Betcha that wasn't very fun.
Anyone who's ever fasted knows that it's not very much fun to go hungry, and it's even less fun to go hungry while you're hiking.
Yeah.
So we had to improvise, and we started. One of the ways we found that we could improvise and expand our food supply was to collect plants, edible plants from the forest, and supplement what food we had with us. That worked out better than we could have ever imagined. We ate good. We felt great. None of us lost any weight. Traditionally, hikers lose a lot of weight when they're exerting so many calories. And from a very early age, you know, I was very fortunate to live very closely with edible plants, and it's become my kind of a big part of my life ever since.
Tell us a story about when you were really hungry, your family was really hungry, and your mom was at the campsite, and she went down to the water and found the celery.
Well, you know, obviously, many of us have been scared into eating things out of the forest because we've all seen or read the book Into the Wild, and there are various other stories in the media. But like I said before, we started running out of food, and I imagine for every parent, it's difficult to watch their kids complaining about being hungry. So there's this pivotal day when we're all sitting in the mountains. Our food supply is down to a little bit of oil, some garlic, and just some condiments. And so my mom goes, and she's kind of walking around. She's washing her face in the stream, and she finds what looks to be very similar to celery. So she smells it. She looks at it very carefully, studies it for a while, and in fact, it does smell like celery. So naturally, she's not going to feed it to the kids first to see what happens. So she decided, I told my father what was going on and said, here, yeah, try this, and if you don't die, we'll all eat some with you. And she did that because, you know, traditionally we're Russian. My dad has a thick Russian accent and doesn't speak English very good. So we thought if we lost him, it would be less detrimental to our family unit. And that's what I call true black humor, Russian black humor. But long story short, you know, that was just at the very beginning of wild edibles for us. That event, in effect, showed us that there was food all around us. We just had to figure out what we could eat and what we shouldn't eat. So that experience led us to pick up a wild edible guide at the next store we passed. We also started meeting people along the way that were herbalists and wild edible experts, and they started slowly pointing out, you know, you can eat this or you shouldn't eat that. And slowly over the course of a 6-month hike, I would say we ourselves became experts because we were doing it every single day, and there were times where we were eating up to 70% wild edibles during those 6 months.
Did it slow down your travel because you had to collect, so much food daily?
You know, it really didn't, because, as you know, on average we hiked about 19 miles a day. Like I said, I was 13, my sister was 12. My cousin, who was with us that year, visiting from Russia to get a well-rounded American experience, came along with us. And so, you know, we kept up that 19-mile pace pretty steadily. Before, we would sit down and just kind of rest on the trail. And when we started harvesting the wild edibles, we would essentially take rest where we found a bountiful supply of greens like miner's lettuce or wild onion. And while we sat there, we would just collect in little buckets. And it really didn't take much time at all.
What are some of your favorite wild edibles that you know, that really surprised you?
Well, my usual answer to that question is I'm a guy that doesn't really have favorites. My favorite is whatever is in season. Mm-hmm. But I do have, you know, lately I've developed a very strong love for a plant called salsify. That's also known as goat's beard. And it's, you know, for those of us living in North America, you may have noticed that towards late summer, you'll see these huge dandelion-like puffballs, and often a common name for that plant is goat's beard. So before that thing turns into a puffball, it has these very brilliant yellow or purple flowers, and it has really long green sepals. And this is the only dandelion relative that's not bitter. So that is some good eating. If you find it, you pop the flower into your mouth, and you'll be surprised at how delicious it tastes.
I'm going to look for it next time I'm out hiking, because I do a fair bit of hiking myself, and always looking for new plants to eat. In terms of berries, it seems like, you know, when we're looking for berries, if you're hiking in the beginning of the summer, you don't see much in berries, but near the end of the summer, there's all kinds of berries. Did you find when you were hiking that you preferred a certain month
Well, you know, it's we started at the Mexican border, and we were going north towards Canada. Mm-hmm. And you are absolutely correct in that berries come in towards late summer or early fall. And so as we started progressing from Oregon into Washington, we were fortunate to hit berry season. And boy, was that a delicious season to be in. You know, blackberries, salmon berries, currants, gooseberries. And like I said, you know, we were happy to see all of it. But then in early spring, kind of where we're in now, there's a lot of miner's lettuce and some sheep sorrel, henbit, chickweed. And those are all awesome greens, very mild, tasted great in salads or wraps or sandwiches. And so it's, you know, thing that wild edibles really turned me on to was seasonal eating, because you really can't, you know, like modern society has the luxury to eat bananas year-round and eat oranges year-round, but when you're living close to nature and eating predominantly wild edibles, you're sort of forced to eat whatever's in season. Mm-hmm.
What about tree bark or trees? Are they edible? What can you get from trees?
Yes, trees. Many of the common trees have an inner cambium layer, which is a sort of like an inner bark that's edible. In my book, both literally and figuratively, trees are a survival food. If you start improperly harvesting this inner bark, it could be detrimental to the tree. You could kill the tree. Mm-hmm. So if you were to harvest the inner bark of a tree, I would recommend that you would take a sucker limb, a limb near the that comes off the actual base of the tree. So you'd cut the limb and then harvest the inner bark from that limb. You can also eat the tender young leaves of maple leaves, birch leaves. But again, they're going to be quite bitter and not the best tasting wild edibles. Mm-hmm. So I categorize them as survival foods. If times are tough, you know, then you'd go towards that. But in the meantime, eat all the other stuff that's delicious and easy to prepare and readily available.
Let's talk about some of the survival foods, because up in Canada, you know, oftentimes, you know, somebody can get lost in the bush and you know, we need some tips on survival. What are some of the survival foods that you and your family have found?
The easiest, best survival food that I like to talk about is grass. Because for most people, when you say you can learn to harvest wild edibles, it's very intimidating. There's a lot of fear there, and they just see a wall of green and think, how can I identify one from the other? But I would say that almost everybody, maybe even everybody, could identify grass versus anything else. And so if you're really struggling, if you're in a huge survival situation, what I recommend is that you just chew on grass. And it's not going to be the most delicious meal you ever had. It's maybe not even going to digest that well. That's why I say chew on it, mm-hmm. and then you can spit out the pulp. But all the essential amino acids are there. All the vitamins and minerals are there. So it will sustain you. It will give you energy. So that's survival food number one. Survival food number two would be dandelions, because most of us know what those look like. Dandelions are very bitter, but the smaller the leaf, the less bitter they are. And most people don't know this, but the flower is actually very sweet and very delicious, so they can do that. You know, basically how I approach this is like a clover would be another good survival food, because every lawn in North America, I'm pretty sure, if you look closely, will have clover leaves. And clover leaves taste like pea sprouts, in my opinion, so that's another really good survival food. Mm-hmm. But basically, I advocate that we slowly educate ourselves about some basic sort of wild edibles, you know, whether it be 10, whether it be 20, whether it be 5. That way, if anything were to ever happen, you know, we'd be more or less prepared and be set.
We're talking with Sergey Botenko, and we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to find out more about some of the foods that you can eat in the wilds.